Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight's guest is sports handicapper Jason Bean, who is paying a second visit to our show. We'll be speaking to Jason in a few minutes. The World Series of Poker is in full swing. At least two former Gambling with an Edge guests have cashed so far this year out of the eight or nine events that have finished. Andy Block got rid of his best player never to win a World Series of Poker bracelet title. He had a win in a $1,500 seven-card stud event. And Danny Negreanu came in fifth in a pot limit hold'em mixed game event. Our guest in the next for the next 2 weeks, Arnold Snyder, has played in several World Series in the past. I don't know if he entered this year or not. Speaking of World Series, last week we were talking about Shaq and me having a side bet in the media tournament event. Now, basketball fans have heard of hack-a-shack strategies used against former player Shaquille O'Neal. I was already planning my own hack-a-shack moves to be used against Michael Shackelford. As soon as last week's show aired and we talked about the side bet, we got an email from former co-host Richard Munchkin. He clearly recognized that any poker bet with Shaq and me is being a positive EV opportunity for him, if he can get in on it. So, he wanted in. Now, even though we'd be taking the worst of it, neither Michael nor I would exclude Munchkin from the side bet. He's a friend, and you don't count EV exactly in small bets against your friends. And $100 is small enough, especially if we could talk Munch into taping a radio show while he was in town for the event. Turns out there isn't going to be a media event this year because they didn't allow an extra day, a day off. Now, that could possibly change, but I doubt it. So, for at least a year, Shaq and I are immune from Richard Munchkin's poker skills. Does that relieve you, Michael?
Yeah, that's clearly a bet that I'm glad I don't have to make. So, I would be making my lousy poker bets probably at my house against Jason, our guest today, as he always beats me in poker.
Uh-huh. All right. Now, we received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com about video poker pay schedules. Someone who called himself Bob, which can't be his real name because that's my name, but he wanted to know if there was an easy way to evaluate Deuces Wild pay schedules. He used to play full pay Deuces Wild. They're getting harder to find, and so he sees all kinds of pay schedules out there, and he wants to know if there's an easy way to evaluate them. In my mind, that's the wrong question. There are dozens of Deuces Wild games, but you need to study two or three max. They each have very different strategies, and you need to learn them. So you need to find the Deuces Wild pay schedules in the area where you live for the denomination. For me, that would be NSU Deuces Wild, which returns 99.7, and double bonus Deuces Wild, which returns 99.8. Those are the Deuces Wild games that I will look for, and if I'm out to play, and I know those strategies. The ones where it has a return of 96.3, who cares? You don't have a, unless you're going to have an edge, there's no reason to play him. Now, you can get the strategies either from Video Poker for Winners or using the Wizard of Odds Video Poker Strategy Calculator. Website vpfree2.com lists all of the good pay schedules for all games, including Deuces Wild. So find the games in your area and learn those.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
I remember the good old days when full pay Deuces Wild was the gold standard and that's what everyone knew.
Yeah.
And now there's, as far as I know, no legitimate reason to even memorize that one because you hardly ever see it. And well, if you did, it would probably be at nickels.
No, actually, there are quarter games out there. Most station casinos, Fiestas, Palms, have that game, Sam's Town, have that game for quarters. If you are a quarter player and you were going to learn one game only in town and you lived in Vegas, Full Pay Deuces is the game to learn.
Okay, and there are players out there that just love video poker, and if you just love the game, you may as well play the best pay table out there.
Uh-huh.
And about VP Free 2, that's a great website, and as far as I know, nothing else free can compare, but it sometimes is a little out of date, in my opinion, and sometimes it will not mention a good game that I know exists. For example, at the Mandalay Bay, it took them ages before they knew that they had 9-6 jacks there.
Yeah, that can happen for a couple different reasons. First of all, the VP Free 2 is run and maintained by volunteers. So some volunteers aren't who will go to scout the casinos are not particularly diligent in scouting regularly. Some don't really know what they're looking for. Some, if they think this game is so good that it would kill it if I announced it to the world, will purposefully hide it. So for all those reasons, the VP Free Guide isn't 100% accurate. But generally, it's pretty good. And if you're coming to town, then it'll give you a good idea what's there so you're not spending the first 30 hours of your visit scouting, but you pretty well know what's going to be in a casino.
I agree.
All right. Now, actually, something happened that isn't quite gambling with an edge, but I got a kick out of it, so I'm going to share it with our listeners. I got on the freeway the other day behind a Jeep Wrangler. Now, a Jeep Wrangler has a tire mounted on its, I guess you call it a tailgate. It's vertically mounted. And this one had a plastic shell around it. Now, on this plastic shell was painted Dirty Jeep Girl. Now, I'm looking at this sign, and I don't know what a Dirty Jeep Girl is. Now, the word dirty could modify Jeep. It could modify girl. And dirty can mean a couple different things. So I didn't know what it meant. And so I decided, and I'm not actually looking for a girl of any sort, but I had to find out what this girl looked like who would go around in a truck that said Dirty Jeep Girl. So I drove up to the side, looked in her window, and discovered that he was a 60-year-old man. So, Michael, had you been in this situation, would you have driven forward and had to find out what this girl looked like?
I would have certainly been curious about it, maybe not as much as you. And I think that was probably a play on words, like maybe she meant to say Dirty Cheap Girl, but she's in a Jeep, so she changed the Cheap to a Jeep.
I don't know. I don't think this guy was either. So I don't know what it was. False advertising. Should have sued him, I think.
I get the feeling that maybe it's a couple that owns the car, and it would just he happened to be driving it that day.
And I would hope it was her father who was driving it. And even though I'm 65, I don't want to. Something about Dirty Jeep Girl implies a younger woman than this guy. Oh well. Why don't you tell our listeners who Jason Bean is and why is he sitting over there wearing a Green Bay Packer beret?
He always wears that beret. And Jason Bean is a handicapper. He works for Leroy's, and he also does a lot of sports betting on his own. I've known Jason pretty much ever since I moved to Vegas, and I see him often. We have had many dinners together, and if he's not talking about sports, he's talking about politics, but he knows sports extremely well, so that's why we had him invited him back on the show. You may recall he was the first guest we had since I started co-hosting. So, Jason, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
It's nice to be back, Mike. Nice to be back, Bob.
In golf, nobody is loved or hated more than Tiger Woods. Now, he's up to fourth in the world on the top-rated American male. The consensus is he's not all the way back to where he was prior to when his personal problems became headline news.
Absolutely. I mean, he's won two tournaments this year. We've got to give him credit for that. But at the same time, he's still got a new swing coach, pretty much. He's having trouble with his driving accuracy, and his putting isn't what it once was. So can that translate to winning a third tournament this year? Probably. Will it be a major? Probably not. There's certain things you need in, like, the U.S. Open upcoming in 2 weeks, or the PGA or the British Open, that you need to excel at to win those tournaments, not just another regular PGA event like last week at the Memorial or the one in Florida earlier this year.
So let's say that I think Tiger Woods is overrated. Is there any bet I can make out there against him?
Well, you can always bet him not to win. There's a yes or no prop generally for each major. You could bet him against him in that. I know there's offshore sites or maybe some even here in Vegas where you can bet against him to win just a regular tournament. If you think the odds, and I would agree with you that it's probably a good bet against him.
Now, it's a better bet against him than for him.
Yes.
But is it a positive EV bet to bet against him?
It would be probably if you could find somewhere around in the minus 400 range for a major tournament. If you could find that, maybe minus 450 against him to win a major, that's tremendous value. I would definitely lay that.
All right.
That's actually the price. You're actually is a 9-2 favorite right now at Cantor's as of yesterday to win.
Right.
Now, isn't that 450?
Well, then you'd probably have to lay like 650.
Yes, exactly. Generally, you're not going to find the yes or no. People just, sportsbooks pretty much just have futures to win. It's hard to find bets where you can bet either way in Las Vegas. If you could do that, that 9-2 odds has been inflated anyway because of his win last week. 2 weeks ago for the U.S. Open, he was trading around 10 to 15 to 1. So they've taken into account his win last week at the Memorial Tournament, and because of that, his odds are 9-2 there now, which is a terrible bet on him.
So on the U.S. Open, which is going to happen, are there any kind of bets that you could share with our listeners that you think might have positive EV for either the U.S. Open or maybe all the majors for the rest of the year or anything like that?
Well, I think the first one I've seen out there is you can lay 3-1 that Tiger will not win any major. With three majors being left, the U.S. Open, which I don't think he'll do very well in. I mean, he's still Tiger Woods, so he very well could win it. I don't think he will. British Open's a totally different beast. You know, there's a lot more European players, different atmosphere. And the PGA, which is in August. I've seen in Las Vegas in the last week when looking for futures odds on the U.S. Open, one place had matchups where you could bet on a certain group of players, to win or not to win a major championship this year. And there was some value against on the no in a few of those particular matchups.
Can you share?
The one that stuck out the best, it was when I got it, it was minus 180. But you'd be betting against Lee Westwood, Steve Stricker, Ian Poulter, and Y.E. Yang that none of those players win one of the final three majors this year.
And Lee Westwood's currently first or second in the world.
Yes. His chances are much greater not to win a major than the odds being posted, however, combined with the other three players. Y.E. Yang's pretty much an entry. He's over 100-1 to win in, you know, each of the majors. Stricker's in the 40-1 range, and Poulter, who's a good golfer, he's just not up playing his best game this year, is in the 50-60-1 range for each of the last three majors. Maybe a little less at the British Open in July. Certainly a little more at the U.S. Open and the PGA than the British. So you're getting some value there laying that 180 that they do not win a major.
If you were going to handicap whether it was good value or not, what statistics that are available to us would you look at in golf? Where do you find them?
For major championships, specifically the U.S. Open, driving accuracy and greens in regulation are absolutely key to success. The fairways at the U.S. Open are generally very narrow. The rough is high, and the greens are quick. So you need someone that's hitting the ball straight with accuracy. It doesn't necessarily have to be that far at this particular course in San Francisco. You want someone hitting the ball straight, gets it on the green in regulation, and the U.S. Open's never a birdie fest. You're just looking for guys to make pars most of the holes, where two or three under par would probably win the tournament. So you just want a steady guy hitting the ball straight, getting it on the green in regulation, and putting average.
And where can you get these statistics?
You can get them on PGAtour.com. Has pretty good stats. You can look at any current players, every round they've ever played on the PGA Tour. You can see the scores of that. And you can get their stats for this year and for last year.
All right. So one dilemma there must be for people that like betting on golf is that most golf bets are futures. And in my opinion, futures bets in general are sucker bets, and it doesn't matter what sport it is because the casinos take about 40% juice out of them at least.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
So you mentioned some props in golf, but in general, what kind of golf bets do you personally like?
Individual matchups. For major championships, some places have over-under winning score. Will there be a hole-in-one, etc.? But generally, single-round matchups, which are generally available for majors, full tournament matchups, which are available for every week and every event. So you're looking... You can put your stats from that week into those in-progress matchups, round 2, 3, and 4. You can get those in there, do some studies on that, and that's where you can find some value. You're certainly not going to find it very often in futures. There's exceptions with futures, however. If they're stagnant, if things have happened, let's say, in the last 3 weeks, and some sportsbook forgets to adjust their odds, you can definitely find some future value there, but it's not very likely, and you don't find it very often.
Were there any outstanding bets on Tiger Woods at the incident where his wife came after him with a golf club, and how did the line change after that?
It didn't really change that much immediately because there was no one, you know, his game had been pretty good up to then. He hadn't played golf in
our lives
since August of that
know
year,
your limitations.
So he came in, I mean...
I never thought I would be a...
He went into, like, a rehab type, you know, thing for... I think his next tournament after that incident was at the Masters the next year, and the odds were pretty much what they always were on Tiger, which is you're not getting any value if you're a bettor.
All right. What was I going to ask you? You mentioned hole-in-ones, and I don't have any statistics on this, but right off the top of my head, if I saw a prop on that in a casino, my instinct would be that the no has got to be at least a fair bet.
Absolutely. I mean, this year, I always bet the no at the Masters every year in April. And it seems like I'm losing more
than... Is that
for
women being admitted, or is that no holes in one?
Right, no holes in one, obviously. There's one hole you've got to sweat in that tournament, which is the 16th hole on Sunday. That's the one where it's set up where if you hit the green, the ball's going to roll back towards the cup. And if you can... get through that, you're going to win because, the second and there's two holes that are almost impossible to get a hole-in-one on, and the third one's very tough. So it's basically on Sunday on the 16th hole you're sweating, and this year there were two of them. So it wasn't a good one, but I only had to lay minus 135 this year. So
I got a hole-in-one in Wii Golf on the second hole once.
Very nice.
Thank you. I was very proud of myself.
How long was the hole?
It's a par three hole, and the tricky thing about it is the wind, and it's basically like a 1 in 1,000 shot, assuming that you're good at Wii Golf to begin with.
Well,
you got it. So to be perfectly honest with you, it was just a matter of time because I used to be quite addicted to that game.
Nice.
Okay, so with the matchups, what kind of statistics do you tend to look at with those, or is it the same ones you mentioned before?
Pretty much the one I like to look at. Well, there's several things for individual round matchups, especially in the British Open. You're not going to find it very often, but once in a while you will, where you're looking at tee times first. If someone in the morning is teeing up against someone in the afternoon, mm-hmm. it's generally at the British Open much windier in the afternoon. So rarely, if you can find that matchup, take the person in the, playing in the morning versus the afternoon, pending weather conditions there. You'd have to look at that first. But if that's the case, you're getting tremendous value on the morning player.
Yep. Is that bets for one round? Or
for one round, yes. So for a whole tournament, each guy's going to play the same amount of, they're going to be teeing in the afternoon on Thursday or Friday, in the morning, Thursday or Friday. You can sometimes, if it's supposed to be really, really windy, a lot more than the previous day, you could find some full tournament matchups with a little bit of value. Certainly nowhere near as much as the first round, though.
Okay, NFL.
Yeah.
There are some lines posted now, including how many wins somebody is going to make. Individual team wins. Now, Michael has a list, which he's going to show to you. And so if you were going to take a look at this list and decide which are the better bets, in general, are there formulas, are there general rules as to which ones are good bet? And in specific, which ones are good bet this year?
Generally, if you were just blindly looking at them, taking over in the lowest teams, like the 4.5, 5-win teams, if you were to take the over in those ones and the under 13, 12.5s, long-term you'll win on those over time. There's a couple this year. I think the Colts going over 5, 5.5 wins is a good bet. Last year with Peyton Manning being obviously he's in Denver now, but they had the number one pick. There's a lot more steady at quarterback with Andrew Luck from Stanford, I think. And they play in a weak division. You're getting the Jaguars and the Titans.
Titans are not
an average team, but I mean the Colts certainly can beat them. They're certainly going to be favored at home against Jacksonville. 5 wins is not a lot in the NFL. If you can get 5.5, it's 5 or 5.5 depending on where you look, I believe, with a different money line, obviously. But I think that's a good bet over. The Lions under for several reasons. First of all, a lot of their wins last year were freaky type wins at the end. A lot of 1-point wins, overtime wins. So their record wasn't really as good as it appeared last year. They've got some issues with one of their better defensive tackles who's been arrested for the second time this offseason. It's kind of a team in turmoil. They have a coach that is way too fired up a lot. I just don't think he can keep a team balanced for an entire season. Last year, I think, was kind of a fluke for them. I mean, they're a good team. They've got the best wide receiver in football, Calvin Johnson, but I don't see that team winning 10 games.
How much should we discount your opinion because you're wearing a Green Bay Packer?
For the Lions, yeah, for the Lions, maybe just a touch, not much. I mean, you've got... If I was to say that about the Vikings or Bears, you could take it to another level. Not so much the Lions.
Okay, and so the audience knows, before the show I showed you this list of season wins from the Mandalay Bay, and it indicated the Colts over 5, even money.
Correct.
And we talked about Detroit. They are under 9.5 minus 125.
Yep, you might be able to find better than you'll probably find 9.5. You might be able to do better than laying $1.25, though, if you
okay.
look around.
These are the MGM Mirage lines. So another one you liked that we didn't discuss yet is the Denver Broncos. You said under 9 at plus 115.
Yeah, that's simply Peyton Manning. We don't know how he's going to be. I mean, he missed the entire season last year with a neck injury. I mean, you can't predict how that's going to heal. I mean, he's throwing the ball well in mini camps, but there's no one chasing him trying to sack him every play either. I mean, his movement is terrible. He's got to get in sync with receivers, which for Peyton Manning is essential. I mean, he had veteran guys with the Colts, some young guys that developed into that system. Another thing, he played indoors a lot too, and that's not going to happen in Denver. There's going to be a lot of, bad weather games there late in the year. He's getting older, and that number 9 is pretty much, they made the playoffs last year, playing in a very, very, as it turned out, a weak division. The AFC West, nobody could really do anything in it last year, but I think that's a really good bet under.
All right, and Pittsburgh Steelers under 10.5 -135. Yeah, what's your opinion of that?
Well, they do play Cleveland twice, which should be 2 wins, and it's a tough division with Baltimore in there. They're getting older. I mean, one of their
are there any teams getting younger?
Well, I think he means they're getting younger if they put on younger players.
Actually, Indianapolis is getting younger.
They
got rid of minor people like Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday. And
Saturday's Joseph on the Packers Adai. Now. So
yes, he is.
Pittsburgh, Roethlisberger has had an incredibly tough time staying healthy. If he's out, there's big problems. The team's offensive line is getting older. Hines Ward just retired. They've got talent on that team, and they play just as hard as – I mean, I have a ton of respect for their coach. He's one of the best in football, but asking that team to win 11 games is an awful lot this year.
Getting older is no fun, but it beats the alternative.
Well, perhaps. All right, let's change sports. Belmont Stakes, possibility of a Triple Crown winner. Is there any positive EV bet that you think is out there?
There might be. I know some sports books have matchups, like one horse against another. I'm not, I'm not a horse bettor, but a positive EV thing would be I'll have another. You buy 10 $2 mutual tickets on him to win, and if he does, well, you're not going to get paid much, but you could turn him into framed photos and stuff like that and sell them on eBay, probably get some plus EV that way. As far as betting paramutually, unless you get a nice rebate, it's best to stay away from it.
So selling winning $2 tickets that might
be
worth...
I've seen them on eBay for Secretariat. Those things are thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and they're like 35 years old.
Right,
but,
of course.
But good. So a $2 ticket might be worth $240 or something.
If he wins, I didn't see the opening odds on him, but I'll be rooting for him, no question.
You'll be rooting for him, but not betting on him.
Right.
Speaking of eBay, I sold an ordinary $1 bill on eBay, and it went for more than $1.
There you go.
To tell us more. There must have been something unusual about it.
No. One of our previous guests, Elliot Jacobson, said that he did this, but I think he did it with a $5 bill. And he just somehow mentioned this one day, and he said, I sold a $5 bill on eBay, and it went for, say, $5.50. And I had the same look that you just did, as why would anybody pay $5.50 for an ordinary $5 bill?
Plus shipping and handling.
Yes. Right. And he said, I just don't know. And so I said, I'm not even sure I believe you, so I'm going to try this myself.
Did it have like a good liar's poker serial number?
No. I just took a random bill out of my wallet that was worn, and I verified that it just had a random looking serial number, and I scanned it, and I put it up on an eBay auction. And it went, it didn't go much over a dollar. It might have been like $1.15. And and furthermore, the guy who won the auction, I said, do you really want the dollar, or how about you just send me the 15 cents that you paid over a dollar? And he said, I'll just pay the 15 cents.
And he sent you the 15 cents.
Yes, he sent me 15 cents by PayPal. And the reason I think for this is... to puff up his feedback rating, thinking that I would give him good feedback.
And you did.
Yes.
Oh, well,
sure.
And I think there's a lot of that.
Anyone who's going to pay more than a dollar for a dollar, you got to give them good
feedback. I don't know, especially if you're going to charge $6 shipping and handling. I think you lost out by only getting the 15 cents on eBay, Michael. I think you gave up positive EV there.
Oh, I'm not the type of person to screw people on shipping and handling, as others do.
By the way, what is handling? That's the way to make the profit for these mail order things, right?
That's a good question.
Plus $6.95 shipping and handling.
Yeah, I don't mind paying for the shipping, but I don't want to pay for handling.
The handling is
I don't know. It depends on who's doing the handling, I suppose. Okay, now in baseball this year, the Tigers were supposed to do real well. The Angels are supposed to do real well. And they started out pretty badly. The Tigers haven't recovered. The Angels are coming back.
Angels are playing a little bit better. The Angels pitching is their problem. Weaver's on the DL. Their bullpen hasn't been particularly good. Their closer's been all right, but Pujols just did not get off to about as bad of a start as he's, you know, 30 games, the worst 30 game stretch of his career.
But he got his hitting coach fired, so at least something good came out of it.
Yeah, well, that's when you pay a guy over $200 million, that's what's going to happen, I guess, if you don't hit.
Poor Mickey Hatcher.
And Prince Fielder with Detroit's actually played okay. I mean, he's not putting up the huge numbers, but their pitching hasn't been particularly good. So, it's getting to be that time of year where you have to be concerned. I mean, it's the beginning of June already.
Now, in terms of rules of thumb betting baseball, now presumably you had the Angels ranked like a pretty strong team at the end of the year, and they started off horribly. So at what point do you change your mind as to whether or not a team is what they were supposed to be or what they are?
It's a little different this year because there's an extra playoff spot. So, but still, usually around Memorial Day, you can get a good sense of what direction a team's going to finish up. I mean, by then you've played just about every team in your league, and just seeing what the problems are and can they be repaired quickly? Are they going to be a buyer or seller at the trade deadline? But you can generally, you know, my favorite team, the Brewers, it's apparent that team is not going anywhere this year. Too many injuries and just not playing hard every day. But I wouldn't give up so much on teams like Detroit. And I mean, they play in a rather weak division. Anaheim or the Los Angeles Angels now. I don't think they're going to catch Texas, but as far as a wild card, they'll be in that all year.
So how does this extra wild card game present useful opportunities for bettors?
Well, it keeps more teams alive later into the year. I mean, going into the last week, there's probably going to be, you know, four or five more teams fighting for that one extra wild card spot. I mean, usually going into the last week, there's three or four teams for one of them. So half the American and half the National leagues will still be alive. It's pretty much going into the last few weeks of the season. It's certainly good for sportsbooks. Handle will be up.
So I can see how that's good for the fans.
Yes,
because your team might have this extra chance. But how is it good for intelligent bettors?
Well, you'll be getting value going against those teams, generally. Those in September, lines are always moved up on those teams in contention against those teams not in contention. And in baseball, it's, you know, nobody's ever, you know, a gigantic favorite when they are with big pitching matchups. But in this particular case, I mean, you'll get some value going against those teams in contention.
Okay.
Let me change the topic a little bit and go to boxing.
Yeah.
Can you give us a basic strategy for boxing if you know nothing about the sport whatsoever?
Yes. Generally for big fights, especially the ones here in Las Vegas, you're going to get really, really good value almost always on a big favorite in a boxing match late, the day of the fight. It seems like everyone in town to watch the fight, tourists, you know, want that big payout on the underdog. It's very similar to the money line in the Super Bowl in football, where you're always going to get a good value on the favorite. It's the same in boxing. People like to put down a little to make a lot, and if you wait till the very end, you know, a couple hours before fight time, you're going to get some really good value on the favorite. You know, the line comes out sometimes 6 months right when the fight is announced, and if that line doesn't move immediately, you know it's a good number.
And I've usually betting on the underdog is the sharp bet, like on a regular season football game on the money line. Mm-hmm. But so why is it different with boxing?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a one-on-one matchup. There's a lot less, you know, luck involved in the outcome. I mean, when one person's going, another thing too, a football line's been up for a week, 5-6 days before the game starts. Boxing, you know, if a fight is in November, there might be a line out right now, and that line's not going to move up until a week or two before the fight. With nothing really changing between the combatants in this fight. So when that line comes down the day of the fight, you know you're getting value there. There's nothing that changed as far as the two boxers are concerned. It's just the way the market's moving it.
Now, this weekend, there's a big fight here with Manny Pacquiao mm-hmm. and is it Bradley?
Yeah, Timothy Bradley, I think.
Somebody that I don't know, I've never heard of, but apparently he's pretty good.
He's young. I think he's got a chance at him. I really do. I mean, I don't think the odds are good enough to bet him. I think he's plus 350, but I...
But your rule of thumb that we should bet Pacquiao
yes.
2 hours before mm-hmm. the match, would that apply this weekend?
There's been... It would apply if that line comes down. I mean, it happens 90% of the time. Pacquiao is a little different because he gets a lot of support from... Lots of people come from the Philippines... to watch him, and they like to bet him. So it doesn't change as much with him as, you know, a couple weeks ago with Mayweather and Cotto, I believe was the matchup. It moved down significantly right before the fight. That was one, there were a lot of people taking the underdog in that fight. You were getting great value on Mayweather right when it started.
Now, what would be significant movement? If now the price is 300 for Pacquiao, and I just made
I think
that
he's
number.
Minus, we'll say he's minus 450.
All right, he's minus 450. How much in general, if it went down to 400?
That's a good bet. It might go even lower. You just got to shop around. Anything 50, 60 cents lower than what was out there for 6 months is tremendous value.
Well, but there's a difference between going from between 450 and 400 as going from 180 to 130.
Yes. Of course, it's not, you know, I mean, if you move it down 100 cents, you know, from 450 to 350, you're getting pretty good value with the favorite, with Pacquiao in that fight. It might even go down further depending where you look.
And that's enough to compensate for the built-in house edge that they have, a 30 or 40%
mm-hmm. You want to compare it to a shop, maybe Pinnacle, see what they're dealing as far as how much juice is coming out of it. If you can beat their numbers by quite a bit, 30, 40 cents, you're doing well for yourself.
So Pinnacle's officially illegal for Americans to bet on, but it's not illegal to look at their site to see what their numbers are.
No, I mean, I look at it every day.
And, is there something that's just different about the boxing and the Super Bowl where... normally in sports, I'm always saying bet the underdogs, but when something really, really huge happens... Does it suddenly become the opposite? Does this suddenly bring out people that will only bet on something really huge mm-hmm. and these people like betting underdogs?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, you got to look at what's filling the rooms in Vegas that big fight weekend, Super Bowl weekend, all tourists. Mm-hmm. They're here to bet. They know nothing about what they're betting generally. They pick someone, a team, a boxer. That's who they're taking. It seems to be, you know, in the Super Bowl, the dynamic has always been the money's coming in on the underdog, you know, on the money line. I remember 1994, my first year out here, the 49ers were 19-point favorites against the Chargers, and you could lay $3 on the money line on San Francisco right before the game. That's how bad it was. So,
and what would be a fair number?
It should have been about 18 or 19 to 1.
18, and you could lay 3 to 1.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, I wish I was here doing
those days. You're never going to see something like that again. There's too many sharp bettors out there now that would catch that.
All right, we got one last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Sports radio.
Yeah.
If you are trying to be an intelligent gambler, do you ever hear anything on sports radio which is going to help you gamble with an edge?
No. I mean, the only thing would be if someone you know, there was breaking news of some injury and you were in a sports book. That's about it. And the sports book didn't hear about it.
And sports books have people listening to the radio.
I'm sure they do, yeah. So basically, no. I mean, you're not pretty much ignore. If you're just a casual fan and you're not a bettor, it's great. It's fun to watch. Great to listen to. If you're a bettor, you're getting absolutely nothing from it. It's you're better off not listening. Better off reading newspapers on the internet for injuries and things like that than you are listening to sports radio and ESPN, where there's too much hype and not enough substance.
Good stuff.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
Michael, what did we learn tonight?
I learned that I'm glad that somebody verified my hunch that betting against a hole-in-one is a good bet.
Good. And
I like the advice about betting boxing, about betting the favorites.
Betting the favorites late.
Yeah, betting favorites late. Never, I'm going to keep my eye on that.
Never bet the favorite right when the line comes out. Unless you're a tremendous boxing handicapper and you know the line is way off. But other than that, wait till the very last day.
You got it.
I have a lady friend, not a girlfriend, but a lady friend who's going to be very disappointed that he thinks betting the under on Pittsburgh is the better bet than the over. In her heart, it's always she thinks it's going to go
16. Remind her who beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl, too, a couple years ago.
Oh, dear. Okay, good. So, Michael, what's happening on the various Wizard websites?
It's been a little bit of a slow week. I mentioned last week that I added a page on Power Baccarat 98 at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore, and they just changed the rules of that game, so I updated that page for the new rules, and I added a review of the Texas Station on my Wizard of Vegas page.
The Texas Station in terms of as a gambling location or as a hotel or as a restaurant place, what did you do?
As basically a hotel is you can click on any hotel in Vegas and about 80% of them are reviewed, sometimes by me. And the goal of the reviewer is to help the reader decide if this is a place I should stay or not.
Very good. All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else. In June, the big promotion is half-price gas cards for your play. For 8,334 points earned in June, you can redeem those points for $25 in cash or $50 in Chevron gas card. There's a limit of 10 of these gas cards for the month. Assuming you value Chevron gas cards at face value, this is like double points for the entire month for your first 83,340 points. Some of us regularly play more than that, but for most players, this is equivalent to double points all month long. I actually, I cashed mine. I was expecting to pay 83,340 points, but they only charged me 83,330 points. I felt I got away with something. I checked, and it's worth 3 cents difference, and that kind of puncture the balloon, but it still felt good to get away with something. At the Palms, every Saturday night in June, there's a drawing for a new Honda Civic. It's worth slightly less than $20,000, or you can take slightly less than $16,000 in cash. On both Friday and Saturday nights in June, there'll be a preliminary drawing at 7 p.m. 10 people will win drawing tickets, and the top five of which will share a total of $1,600. The 10 winners from Saturday and the 10 winners from Friday will compete for the car immediately after the Saturday night drawing. The Play, Earn, and Win Monday, Wednesday, Friday promotion for the first half of June has a Father's Day theme. You can earn toolbox, chamois, three-pack of Miller Lite, etc. The gifts that are most interesting to me are $100 Visa card you earn for 40,000 video poker points, or $25 gift card costing you 10,000 points, and you keep the points. Now, assuming these cards are at face value, this adds 0.25%. There's a lot of players who are playing the 50,000 coin in every Monday, Wednesday, Friday for those two gift cards. So that means that the drawings on Friday and Saturday have less equity this month than they normally do. I normally think they have about close to 0.2 in the drawings. This month it's closer to 0.1 simply because the PEWs are useful this month. And in many cases, they aren't particular, and sometimes the gifts just aren't particularly interesting. But Visa gift cards is something that nobody can have too many of. Well, certainly nobody I'm married can have too many of. The Shirley has a way to get rid of these cards. All right. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to have Arnold Snyder as our guest. You're going to have a guest back-to-back. Now, Arnold is a famous blackjack author, but he's written about other games as well. And in particular, he has written two separate poker books called Poker Tournament Formula and Poker Tournament Formula 2. So we're going to be talking about both of those. I have read them both, found they made very... It opened my eyes. Some of his writings are controversial. I'm looking forward to him being here.
Me too.
He's one of your heroes as well, I assume.
Yeah, I love all his writings about everything that he does.
There was maybe a cheating incident at an invitational poker tournament that I was in last weekend. I can tell you what happened. I wasn't sure enough that cheating was involved, and so I didn't press charges at the time, and now the moment has passed. So I'm going to ask Shaq and Jason what they would have done if they would have seen the same thing and drawn the same conclusions that I did. Now, this was an event where there were slightly more than 200 players playing in three different groupings, 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m. So there's like 70 people per starting time. And once they got down to 10 people, that round ended. And then those people went to the finals, which would start at 7 o'clock at night. So and so there's 30 people in the finals. A key part of the rules and a key part of the cheating incident was that the amount of chips you had in the earlier rounds didn't matter as long as you had at least one when they got down to 10 people, and you could have had one or 50,000, you were in, as long as you were one of the last 10 of each starting group. So now, when our group was down to 20 people, I had lots of chips. I had played well, I think, and won a couple of big pots. So I figured that I could coast. I was just going to fold every hand because all I had to do is to be in the final 10, and whether I came in with a big cushion or a small cushion wouldn't matter. I played Hollywood guy and fake like I was trying to think about it because I didn't want some of the other players to figure out the strategy of just folding everything.
Good strategy.
And in one case, when we were down to 12 people, there were two guys with 30,000 in chips each, which was plenty. They could have just coasted. But they each got dealt premium hands, and one of them got knocked out with only 12 people to go, and he had to get down to 10, where there were four or five other people who had 5,000 in chips or less. So they just did not understand the basic strategy. However, be that as it may, made it to the finals. And about 45 minutes in, one of the players from my table went to the bathroom. Not a big deal in and of itself. Now, there was a break, and I actually, I actually counted his chips while he was gone. I like to keep track of how big my stacks are compared to somebody else's. And he had three yellow chips, which were 1,000 apiece, and 9 or 10 purples, which are 500 apiece, and about 20 blacks, which are 100, and some greens, which are 25. So it came out to be about 10,000. At the time, I had 11,000 plus, so I had him covered if we went heads up against each other. So I had similar counts for all the other players at the table. After this player came back, And without him being involved in any hands, I noticed that his stack was the same, except now instead of three yellow chips at the bottom, he had six. Somehow his stack had increased by three chips. Now, what I think happened, and I'm just deducing this, not I didn't see it, is in the earlier rounds, he had enough of a head start that he knew he'd be in the finals. So at one point, he must have palmed three yellow chips. And when it was over, he put them in his pocket or he hid them in the bathroom or something. I don't know exactly what he did with them. And then when during the bathroom break that he took, because who's going to say somebody doesn't need to go to the bathroom, then he pulled them out and he came and he put them back. Now, that's what I think happened. It's possible that three chips were hidden from me. You're supposed to have your chips stacked neatly. This is an invitational tournament. Lots of dummies there. And maybe there were just three hidden that I couldn't see. So I didn't know for sure. I definitely did not see him add the three chips. Anyway, I was knocked out shortly thereafter. He wasn't involved in it. And I left. And so I just don't know how well he did. But I think he probably took a shot. And it did not affect my results this time. But if somebody's going to add 3,000 to their score, to their chip stack, that hurts my EV. So anyway, I ended up doing nothing. Mike, what would you have done?
So the top 10 players advance is what you were saying, or when it got down to 10?
When it got down to 10 in each of the three preliminary rounds. And then they all started out with 6,000 in chips at later.
Why don't we turn that over to Jason?
Well, first of all, it's a terrible setup for the palms to be. That's a terrible way to run a tournament. Knowing that something
I didn't
like,
say it was palms, and it wasn't. But I won't.
I thought you said it was the palms. I'm sorry.
No.
Anyway, I think it was a terrible way to set up a tournament. Number one,
and like a super satellite.
Well, at the second round of this particular tournament, they should be using different chips. Different colored chips, different forms, whatever. Knowing something like this is considering all you have to do is come in the top 10 in the first round, you would think the tournament director or something would think something like this was very possible, considering if you're using the same chips, why wouldn't someone just slip a few and then put them back in later in the tournament? I mean, if they've got enough chips to not even play a hand in
all right,
advance.
So it was badly designed, but
yeah,
that it was what it was. So if you came across it, what would you have done?
I would have to be absolutely certain that someone did put the chips in before I said anything. I mean, if I saw the guy reach into his pocket and pull three chips out, I would say something. Other than that, I would have to let
it go. Just using the same deduction of you had counted them and there were three and now there's six. It's just like...
I would have to accuse someone of that, I would have to see it personally.
In the Old West, you would have shot him anyway. All right, Michael, what would you have done?
Well, this seems like a terribly tempting way to cheat. And do you think that where they don't change the color of the chips, this is likely to happen?
Oh, absolutely.
I am very big on not making false accusations. So if I'm going to accuse somebody of something like that, I want to have seen it with my own eyes.
Absolutely.
And even if I thought that I had a 95% chance of being right,
which I did,
I would have to defer to that 5% doubt and keep my mouth shut.
I would too.
All right, so we are in agreement that we're all wimps and would not have turned the guy in.
Yeah. I'd have to see it. I mean,
all righty. So we thank you very much for listening to Gambling with an Edge. Thank you again, Jason. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes this week.
Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.